Welcome, team. Welcome, team. Oh, right. Whoops. Yeah, so my window just went away again. Okay, that's okay. It says leave meeting. No, don't do that. Okay, all right, here we are. Here we are, team, all a little bit addled, but we're here to gather our wits. And so we begin with tonight's weather report. Here we go. So we start off very boys and very heat, and we will be ending very ocean and cool to cool out the conflagration. But I do love that ancient, cheesy, wonderful song, especially the line, "Caught up in the action, I'll be looking out for you. Caught up in the action, I'll be looking out for you." And that's a feeling we want to have, O team, even though we're not in a circle. But here we are conferring, and if everybody has their little scrap of paper or their stone or anything or or their shambles that they've made from pocket lint, you know, about their dedication. Because before we deconvene, we will each person will just hold their little thing or pretend you have one if you right. And we will by group caught up in the action. We'll be looking out for you. We will give it, you know, woof to be real. So, well, this is kind of cool, Sean, that the heat is on. I discovered from the Farmer's Almanac that June 17th, here we are, not only the Watergate anniversary, this June 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th, 21st, 22nd, 23rd are the exact same longest days. The daylight is 15 hours and 17 minutes starting today through the 23rd. And 23rd, well, here we are, and we'll do tonight, you know, and then we're going to the summer solstice on the 20th, and then the 21st is the summer solstice full moon. That just due to symmetry, I go, Sean, we should probably do that. And then the 22nd is sort of a day off, I guess, and then the 23rd is High John Eve. Do you want to say a little bit about High John Eve as part of this whole deep sun still time?
Yes, well, you know, John the Baptist is the way that the Wild Redeemer, wearing his garland of mugwort as a loincloth, sneaks into the Christian world. And under his loincloth, he smuggles in all of the old ways of honoring the brightness of the sun and of summer. And of the burning truth that comes forward from the wilderness. And so we want that truth to burn like the ancient bonfires that were the fires that gathered the people together, but to be contained within the place of that bonfire and no longer to spread as wildfires are spreading now.
Right. Well, yes. Okay. So the Wild Redeemer leaps into the Christian world, smuggling everything in his loincloth. Perfect, because that's one of our themes now, tonight, forever, is the importance of eccentricity. I was rereading that chapter and also listening on Audible to The Dawn of Everything. It's very good walking at night. The community needs the eccentric. It needs that. And I got into a an ultimately not useful Facebook thing, but somebody had posted a photo. They were on vacation, and there was a woman taking a selfie of herself, but she was quite striking, exotic, right? And this innocent person posted this, going, "Look at this beautiful woman. She's so exotic, you know, and how wonderful." And people just jumped on her, going, "You cannot call anybody exotic. That's othering them." Right. And part of me is like, as opposed to saming them, you know, anyway, right. But it was not a crowd up for humor. And you, because people were like, that's not okay. That's racist. That's othering them. And I was like, saming them, you know, and I said, maybe what we want to change, I think of exotic as, you know, whatever. And she goes, only white people think that. And it's like, whoa, okay. But it did get me thinking, you know, and I did even post there going, well, perhaps what we want to change is the atmosphere about how we embrace the exotic, the eccentric, the ecstatic, because the word eccentric means out of the circle, and the word ecstatic means to stand outside. So I was like, ecstatic, you know, and exotic and whatever. And perhaps we want to change the atmosphere. And then somebody was like, oh, you white people love the word exotic. Nobody likes being called exotic. And then she went off, and I go, it's always liberating when tyranny, you know, departs in a hybrid huff. Anyway, so I got that line out of it. But it was interesting. I don't know how anybody else feels about the word exotic. But the woman was taking a selfie of her face, you know. But it's like, okay, it's a tripwire. There are so many. But it did make me think of my inhaling throughout the Graeber book, right? But the importance of, I guess we could say, the exotic, the cross-pollinating, the heretic, right? And our word sacred comes from saker. And it was a sign posted outside Greek villages, meaning if you go past this sign, you are saker, You are on your own, and we don't recommend it. Better to stay, whatever. And so Sakir meant an act of defiance. I'm gonna climb the sacred mountain. I'm gonna do that thing and then come back to the community, right? So sacred means breaking the conformity rules, doing the thing for the benefit of the community, you know. And is that a fun idea for everybody? The Zoom has chopped off the top of, I can see the bottom half of everybody, right? So feel free to, and as we go along, you know, feel free to chat, chime in, any of those things, right? So solstice, solstice, sun, solstice, stand still as it's doing starting today. You know, and when I said, you know, a lot of the diagnostic terms we have, like ADHD, so many people are like, I've just discovered I'm ADHD, and it's, or I've been this, or it's a terrible affliction, or it's like, isn't everyone? And I forgot who was writing about it, saying it's just hunter-gatherer mind, you know, it's a different thing. And then also bipolar, and just due to the, I'll bring up the chart just for fun. It's ADHD is widely available, which is why we're gathering to go focus. And I think my feeling about almost all diagnostic words is to use them once to start the conversation and then throw them into the Pluto Neptune bubbling, dissolving cauldron to find another story. So yeah, let me bring up the chart. So if people have been feeling or focused and on it and doing your work, or just any old way, or type it in. But I'll show us the. Oh, wait, somebody's sharing a thing, which is wonderful. Okay, but now I can't see it. Okay, so just, you know, here we are, and the sun in late Gemini. Venus and Mercury have held hands together and entered zero Cancer, so they're, oh, I don't know what that's doing. So they're leading the way into Cancer, the solstice moment for the sun, which will be on Thursday afternoon, right there. But on its way there, the sun in Gemini is squaring Neptune, dreams, vision. So this, for a long time, we've had this Gemini Pisces conversation, and what it wants to be, of course, is the re-wedding of what's been falsely estranged, you know, intellect, mind, messenger, and the power of myths and dreams that cultures have symbolically embedded their science in their myths and fairy tales, and many examples that we may have touched on. But so it's the mental and the deep. But if we're not Saturning, it can be, well, what I often tell people with what's called mutable squares in their chart, and then we'll just tease this into all of us, is it's a very advanced nervous system that could go hypervigilant, right? It just thinks more and notices more per minute or per inch than other people other times. So it's sort of like out and about, and then full pull back in. So I don't know, does that feel like, anybody who's willing to speak, does that feel resonant with yourself, Sean? You get to be the voice of everybody.
It does, absolutely. And this week the fireflies have been my great teachers as I've been watching. They've been coming around me more and more, and I noticed that they are kind of like stars, but their constellations are always moving. But then, of course, the actual constellations are always moving if we look far enough out with a big enough view. And then in the midst of their motion, when I settle into the center of it, there's stillness.
Right. And then I ran across the, it fits. Yeah. And then you did say, let's let go of the desire for grand plans and manifestos. I'm like, I like manifestos. Okay. But yes, those are good things that you wrote. And then, Right, so we encourage us all to have some little thing, some piece of paper, some stone that we're imbuing with our dedication that is our private thing. But as we journey, as we cavort tonight, we can think of many dedications. And what fit so well with your message is this great essay in the Washington Post by Taya Miles, author of Night Flyer. It's coming out, it's being published today. How the Natural World Helped Guide Harriet Tubman. Harriet Tubman, I have a little plaque saying, she said, "I can say what most conductors then, which is I never lost a passenger and I never had an unsuccessful," right? She led 300 people out of slavery in 19 journeys, but her animism. The stars had watched over her, and she would in turn observe their light, seeing in these gaseous bodies a host of incandescent messengers. It's like, ooh. And so she always felt that, the stars and the waterways had shored her up and gave her and those she was guiding safety, Big Mama. Remember this time period right now from Gemini into Cancer, where the sun moves from Gemini into Cancer. It's the realm of Legba, the messenger, and the thinking realm who hands the baton to Cancer, incarnational agent of Big Mama, the moon, the water. And all of the Santeria chants are, Kai, 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 Yamaya, Laudo. How wonderful, my mother's house is in the sea. My mother is an anchor in the storm. And so Harriet Tubman really had that. The waterways protect us. We cross the water. The hunting dogs can't find us. And it's said, in feng shui that bad spirits can't cross running water. I guess same idea. And then I love this phrase to all of us here and to your Celtic herbalist self. Her most intimate natural allies seem to have been those sprung from the soil, the weeds that defied ordered hierarchical society, and the trees. And then I love this as part of our collective aspiration. By the end of her life, she had herself become like these various features of nature, a guiding star, a giving tree, a saving river, an embracing rock. In the lives of the people who depended on her and on whom she depended for companionship. It's like, oh, I mean, I love what she did there, which is whatever we find in nature, we make a not even a formal thing. Let us be like that. The star that guides me, may I be a guiding star. The water that provides safety, may we provide safety. The giving tree, may we be generous. The bracing rock. So I love that. Yeah, her effective animism. So back we are here to the chart. Oh, and this is very exciting. So when we began minutes ago, the moon was at 8 degrees Scorpio, which is about really looking at sketchy stuff. Its image is a dentist drilling decayed teeth. And once when I actually was at the dentist when the moon was at that degree, and he was drilling, and I go, "Or you're drilling decay in my body and the body politic." And he's like, "I like that." But now, so we look at difficult things, right? But now the moon has changed degrees, to 9 Scorpio, one of my favorite degrees. Here we are. May we be influential. Because if we look at the back of a $100 bill, there's a clock tower on it with a very specific time. And if we do a birth chart for America with that time, it gives 9 Scorpio rising. It's sort of, I think of it as the secret soul of America chart. And the image for this degree is a fellowship supper reunites old comrades. And it's like, that's what we're supposed to be. That's what we're supposed to be. I mean, I know you want to bring up migration at some point, Sean, which is great. And yeah, fellowship supper, welcoming, welcoming. We'll also get to Project 25, where Trump wants to shut down the border so that nobody crosses the border, and we'll get to nefariousness. We'll keep the 8 Scorpio behind us, but this, and then just the heat. So across the street in the house where Aaron used to live, fond memories. But these. workmen, these immigrant workmen have been working for 4 days from 7 in the morning to five, hardly stopping, moving rocks in this heat. I'm like, whoa. And it's like, what are they doing in the backyard? I hope it's wonderful. Oh, it's sort of okay. It's more work than beauty, but it's like, oh, again, gratitude for all beings in the heat. And as a little sidebar, something increasingly useful, I've discovered how to easily translate Celsius into Fahrenheit temperature. And the easy way, and this is increasingly important because you go, oh, the easy way is to take the Celsius temperature, double it, and add 30. So if the Celsius temperature in the tents in Gaza is 50, it's 130 degrees. It's 130 degrees in the tents in Gaza. In Egypt, it's like 125 degrees. So it's like, vroom. So we want to cool out. And then just our model of Saturn stationing. I do love Saturn stationing, gathering our wits. Saturn will station and it's at its stationing degree, like the sun is stationing. It really wants our attention. And then Saturn will retrograde on June 29th at 12:07 Pacific time. We go, ooh, so then it's forward, deep, deep, deep. It's like the vows, the dedications we make now with the retrograde then deepen in order to then become incarnational actuality on the forward swing by the end of the year. It's like, oh, okay. So there. And then we can look at the moon as the story of us in a way. The moon was that will do fine. The moon was in the 8th house, in the 11th house. It just changed houses. I see. Never mind me. A little bit confused. But so this is us in a way, and the moon quintiles Ceres Demeter, goddess of the earth, irresistible eloquence on behalf of what we love in the earth, and Ceres Demeter quintiles Neptune. We go, ooh. And then, so it's 72 degrees, 72 degrees, 144 degrees. And I always love, as we remember, irresistible eloquence. We plight our troth, irresistible eloquence on behalf of what we love in nature. Ceres is in Capricorn. It's like to apply these things, to dedicate to making things more beautiful, more wonderful in some way. And the quintile is the capacity to open portals between worlds. And we go, all right. So the moon is sort of the entire history of wizards and witches and lunar priests. And so it says, ah, it trines 120 degree angle, Mercury and Venus in Cancer, being a voice. This is presaging solstice into the full moon on Friday night on the 21st at 9 p.m. And it's the sun in Cancer, moon in Capricorn. No, other way. Yeah, that's right. Sun in Cancer, moon in Capricorn, full moon, which is about taking Capricorn structure, dedicating Capricorn structures in our life and in our community, dedicated to Big Mama, to community well-being, to everybody. We go, okay. The moon in Scorpio has a quirky angle to Jupiter in Gemini. Now we have the Scorpio Gemini conversation. It's all conversing. It's all conversing. Moon in Scorpio, sizzly, smoldery, deep. Jupiter, big in Gemini, conversational. So to be able to speak, perhaps this is a part of all of our dedication, or you can gather it, two drops of this in our tinctures, our brew. To be able to speak about big things in a conversationally accessible way, big, deep, spicy things. Again, nothing more fun than speaking truthfully. Puts that on the table. And then we have the moon opposite Mars. And just for our historic resonance, it reminds us always to animate the desirable, lest we leave it by default to the dementors. A friend had said, "Do you know the etymology of symbolic?" I'm like, "Oh no, sim means together and ball is to throw." And so he said, either we have a symbolic way of relating to the world, or the world is diabolic. And we go, ooh. So I look at Mars, it's 6 Taurus. 6 degrees Taurus is a powerful resonant degree. Its image is the woman of Samaria at the ancestral well, healing cross-cultural encounters around water. We go, good. Let's see that. Let's do that. And again, we're keeping up our practices. Even in the chaos where I forget things, I go, nope, before sleep, Leonard Peltier, emerging, dedication, yes. So the first 9/11 mishap in this country was September 11th, 1857. And it's when the Mormons dressed up as Indians and attacked a wagon train. And then said to the pilgrims, the pioneers, "We see you're out of water. If you want to go get water, you can do that." And they're like, "Thank you." And they started to go get water, and the Mormons killed them all. And Pluto was at 6 Taurus. And it's like, no, healing cross-cultural encounters around water. And when Trayvon Martin was murdered by George Zimmerman, the Moon and Mars were at 6 Taurus. And it was given voice to the Episcopalian minister, who said, "I want to live in a world where George Zimmerman offered Trayvon Martin a ride home in the rain, healing cross-cultural encounters around water, water for everybody, water for everybody." So our dedication, and many other things we can play with, but it would say, we come from a lineage of those speaking artfully with craft on behalf of what they love. Those whose words could provide an atmosphere of kinship and safety. It's since we're bringing, you're bringing John the Baptist in, and then of course he's syncretized with High John the Conqueror, the great trickster, folk hero of New Orleans. Syncretized out of many, many things. We'll get to migration. Out of many, many things, many different. African diaspora is all forced into slavery, and they syncretize. And it said that High John was not a man, but a will to hope at first, and that will to hope then put on molecules of actuality. And with his drum, with his Saturn drum keeping the beat, and he, like Scheherazade, is interested in liberating the slave, those enslaved, liberating, even the slaveholder, liberating the entire situation, right? And finishing it all off with a laugh. So we go, ooh, some ingredients of High John the Conqueror laughter into play. So yes, and I forgot whatever I was about to say, so let me turn it over to you, Sean, about migration or wherever you want to go.
All beings are migrants in one way or another. Like, we all initially migrated from the sea onto the earth, and then from river valleys in Africa out into the rest of the world, traveling, 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 and always have. And so too the animals, and so too the plants, and so too the fungi. And, in this time when so many people are struggling in so many ways, it's alarming to see the old playbook coming back into play of, when people can't afford housing and can't afford food, let's blame the foreigners and say that those from beyond our imaginary borders are the cause of the problem. And of course, that becomes especially perverse in North America. I think about Dolores Huerta, the United Farm Workers, and what she said about the border. She said, "We didn't cross the border crossed us." Speaking of coming from this long lineage of people who had always moved. across those spaces. But it's happening across Europe. It's even happening in Ireland, which has been so famous for being the place of welcome for the stranger. And now in the local elections and the European Parliament elections, the horrible housing crisis that people are facing was turned into a reason for hostility against immigrants. And there are many nefarious forces at play there, just as there are many nefarious forces at play here. And so it feels a very, very important time to remember that all beings have always been migrants, and all beings have always been on a journey. And about awakening that memory in everyone. And thinking, of course, especially about the people who are crossing deserts in tremendous heat right now, and the people who try to bring them water and get stopped, and about that great healing that needs to happen with these people who are coming, seeking refuge from conditions that are often of our country's making, needing to be welcomed and embraced. And I often think about, if you were to sit down with most of the people who I know who speak ill of immigrants, and you were to describe somebody who walked through a jungle and then rode on top of a train and then crossed a desert and then worked three jobs in order to feed their children and their siblings' children and their parents and their grandparents, they would think of that person as a hero. And so, how do we reawaken that knowledge and memory of kinship, and that knowledge and memory that, however long we think we've been here, we come from people who came from somewhere else. And even those we now call indigenous, were migrants once upon a time, and also tend to be much more welcoming of contemporary migrants than those of us who are descended from settlers and refugees.
Yeah, let's keep this rolling. Donna chimes in. Great chat. I'll be with you, everybody. Donna says, Graeber and Wengrow say that in prehistory, people actually moved around the planet more than we do now. I love that. And I was listening to a really great podcast, Throughline, on the Indo-European language and, the mother tongue. And great archaeologist detective. Archaeologists are detectives. The story of the mother tongue. Where did it start? When? How did it spread? And it, these are all useful things for us now. The word Aryan comes from Persia, and it meant a Persian person or somebody who read the Rig Vedas in India, right? That's what Aryan meant. And then he's tracking, like, well, and how does this Indo-European language and even the word Aryan spread? And he said, the detective clues are 3200 BC. We see graves and burial mounds from another culture coming into established cultures. And we see these burial mounds. And he says, mourning is a great cultural expression. So he's tracking rites of mourning as they spread with these people who are spreading the Indo-European language coming in. And it's like, and how could they do that? He said it's the Yanaya culture, 3200 to 2600 BC. It's the northern steppes in the Caspian Sea. And how could they spread? How could they migrate? Because of horses and they had wagons with wheels. So 3200 BC, we've got wagons with wheels and horses. And they're spreading language and genes and mourning rituals. So I just thought that was completely interesting.
And one of the rituals that travels with that, with that, besides mourning rituals, and of course, mourning rituals are rituals of marking the migration of the spirit. But one of the other rituals that comes with those horses and those wheels is the cart on which you put the figure of the body of the Great Mother and honor her. And that continues in parts of Scandinavia with figures of Freya being carried on the cart and being brought offerings in ways that relate to the way the same thing happened in Egypt, in ways that go back to these same origins on the steppes.
Right. And then listening on the Dawn of Everything, to what you brought up before, Kandi Arak, is that right? It's Kandi Arak, who is it starts with W, right? He's a member of the Woo, yeah, but he speaks Iroquois and Huron, but he went to Europe, right? He went to Europe, and there was with a delegation, and they came back and they were completely sharp and witty about the deprivations of French society, going, what is this craziness and what is this money wealth that you have, that throws people off track and takes them from contemplative leisure, and went on and on in this critical way, which was great. And it became, I mean, again, it's the exotic outsider who, it became a huge thing in the salons of Europe, people reading these discourses from and critiques of their own culture, and questioning everything. So the exotic, the sacred, the ecstatic, the eccentric, again, questions everything, the cross-pollinating. So when you say, yeah, we want to, part of our brewing medicine is how do we welcome the stranger? And I always go back to, a stone I carry in my pocket, which is, when traveling with Deborah Felmuth in Syria, the Bedouins are desert people, so welcoming. Halloo, halloo, change your direction and come this way. And we knocked on a door at a Bedouin. It was cold and windy, a Bedouin small township, because we wanted to see the beehive architecture that they're famous for. They build these buildings that are shaped like beehives that last forever. And Deborah said, "We'll just knock on a door." I'm like, "Really? There's no cars. We're the only Westerners. Is that?" And she goes, "No, you'll see." And the woman leans out and then goes, "Strangers, how wonderful! How wonderful! Coffee and th no, we just want to know this or that. That's great." And if we could, again, necessary miracles, just tease into ourselves and this culture, the Bedouin welcoming of the stranger, that rather than refugees, pilgrims to whom we would say, "You, welcome, welcome. You must have endured so much," exactly as you delineate. "You must have seen so much. You must have so many stories, and they must be the stories that we all need now. Please, welcome to become, everything. What are we wedding? What are we divorcing in this week? And what are we wedding at the solstice?" Yes, I see.
Well, I'm thinking about all the stories across so many cultures where the gods test people by putting on ragged cloaks and
Yes.
showing up as a stranger coming to town and seeing how they're treated and bringing blessing or chastisement according to how they're received. And that even filters into the Christian concept of never knowing when you might be entertaining angels. And, so, yes, how do we bring back that welcome? How do we bring back the candle in the window? How do we bring back that awareness that actually everyone showing up at our doorstep is the divine in a ragged cloak?
No, I do. I feel inspired because the hospitality of the Middle East is so And so many cultures, right? You know, it's like, here, please, you know, here, the thing and the coffee and the thing and the thing, and we have not much, but here, there. And it's true, it serves as incentive, you know, my own, you know, default churlishness, like, do you want tea? No. Oh, good. Anyways, it's like, no, more Bedouin, more Bedouin. You know, again, we're putting it into our syncretized brew. Yeah, no, that's a great. Yeah, Harun al-Rashid, the great king in the Arabian Nights, would disguise himself and walk among the people to gather intelligence, which is kin to that. And then in fairy tales, you know, just to go back briefly to the chart, in fairy tales, how we treat the beggar, here's the fairy tale realm, how we treat the beggar has everything to do with the outcome of the story. How we tip the waitress, how we treat the beggar. You know, good day, sir. And in fairy tales, also the Sicilian fairy tales of, you know, how we treat the challenging underworld witch. One of the Sicilian tales is the youngest daughter, you know, cast upon, you know, take the garbage to the dump. Okay, you know, her bucket slips from her hands and falls into the dump. She goes down there, and at the bottom is an old woman going, you know, fix my shawl, do these things. Yes, grandmother. Yes, grandmother. Do this for me. Yes, grandmother. And many things, right? And then the witch at the bottom of the garbage heap, all of that's important, like Cinderella is the underworld, says, you know, here's a little token of my you're a good daughter here, you know. And she gets back up, and her family is so jealous because it's jewels and beautiful things. So the older sister grabs the bucket and throws it down the thing and goes down, and the old woman says, I mean, you can see, right? You know, fix this. No, you old hag. You know, anyway, so it doesn't turn out well. But it's all, you know, the Saturn station, I think, for all of us, you know, with all of our mutual aid and seeing it, is our capacity to move our default setting, you know, the setting down. But I do, you know, and there's notes people saying, you know, and Andrew saying, what about the Neptune to Pluto sextile? Right. We love that. It's Pluto to Neptune to Uranus. Is that right? Yes. And then trine back. So it's the power of nature, and community, you know, as revealed to us also how to cooperate, you know, in fairy tales, you know, how we treat everybody, to the Uranus participatory animism, you know, and the trine back says, again, it says, you know, the outsider who is kinned is as though a part of nature has put on a disguise. Remember, you know, in the midst of a wild storm, a stranger walks into town wearing a silk top hat, carrying a large black bag, the doctor magician, right? How that is welcomed, you know, between worlds. And a sextile, you know, Neptune and Pluto, they tend to stay in sextile for a long time. We all, many of us have it in our birth chart, but it is, you know, the metaphor is the incarnational garb whereby power enters the world, you know, and our metaphoric agility, our shape shifting. And then I do love the many travelers, the many things that underneath all casual conversation, there's deep fellowship to be had. And I think, excuse me, resetting our default, that our manner of relating be an offering rather than an imposition. And if it's an offering, we have no attachment to how it's received. You know, it's like, woof, woof, want to play? No? Okay. All right. Okay. You know, and you know, to put these things on the table, the Saturn deep, deep vows that we can't even be who we want to be by ourselves. It's why it's so useful in a group the likes of ourselves with such interesting and compelling knowledge and ancestry, you know, going, well, this is how I want to be, you know, that my manner of relating be an offering. And we all blow it. Like, that's the thing about fairy tales. We all blow it. Robert Bly used to say, if we're rude, you know, we get eaten by the witch. Excuse me. And that happens. But he says, but if it goes on for years, you'll get pretty thin. So we all blow it. Percival blows it. forgets to ask the right question, we're rude to a stranger, and then but then we come back, and if we can remember the Gurdjieffian levels chart too, I think it's a time where we might be sort of at moving at the top, which is remorse, which is all those times where it's like, ooh, I could have been kinder. I missed that opportunity. And remember, in the Gurdjieffian levels chart, that's a very high state. Remorse is the last of the negative states before being subject to laws when as agents of principles. So, yeah.
Well, I think about how the planets themselves, often in old European language, are referred to as the wanderers.
Oh yeah, right. The wandering stars. Yeah, and then right, no, but I like people chiming in today, kind of drifty and word-free, this miasma of long COVID, communing with virus, now on fourth microdose of COVID, microdose of mushrooms, we don't know. But looks good. So and Yona says also wondering about this quincunx between Venus, Mercury, and Pluto. Yeah, let's just take a look at that as we clarify. So everything is a conversation. So Venus and Mercury, oh, they've just set from the seventh house of cahooting into the sixth house of our deeper dedicated service. So it's all moving. Oh, and Capricorn's rising now. Oh, okay. And then we have the great Taurus Libra Midheaven conversation, the two Venuses that we dedicate to being cultural agents on behalf of what we feel kinned with in nature. Excellent. The Mars opposition, but asking about the quincunx, the 150-degree angle, which is indeed, quirky. And it's another conversation about. Well, I think it's, the entire history. Cancer says, history is the womb of time. We go, right. It's the Brer Rabbit. It's Brer Rabbit. There was times when all the critters used to gather to sagacuate, just like there ain't been no hard times, like there ain't been no falling out, like they all remembered they were kin. And it's an interesting conversation, Cancer to Aquarius. It's what Elizabeth Warren has in her chart. She's a sun in Cancer with, I think, the moon in Aquarius, to tease Cancerian qualities of tending and caring into the community of collective governance, as part of that dynamic. I think that's a crucial part of it. And our prayers, remembering remembering kinship, and our blessings that all have sufficient coolness and food and safety. So it's a conversation about safety and danger in a way. But yeah, and then these guys, they're it's a wide orb, but the square, well, actually pretty good to square to Neptune. So all of the stories, Brer Rabbit and so on, that guide us. And I think like the Panchatantra is the oldest frame book that we know of, older than the Arabian Nights, which is stories within stories within stories. And I do love it. I quoted it about since scamp and sneak and snake so often undertake a plan that does not thrive, the world wags on alive, that evil is intrinsically stupid. That's why we were kind of resonating it with the Watergate break-in today, anniversary, solar return for that. But it talks about the frame story is that a king has summoned wise animals to teach his ignorant children about what's really important in life, and talks about, the value of friendship and kindness. Better with the learned dwell, even though it be in hell, than with fools roam palaces that gods call home. So, fairy tales, they are wonderfully subversive. I mean, and don't you think that they're. The fairy tales and the myths are always really about welcoming the stranger, right? And not cutting down the trees is also a very important theme.
Absolutely. Oh, and I'm noticing that in the chat, oh, well, two things come to mind. One thing I'm noticing in the chat that Donna is mentioning that it is indeed mushrooms that she's microdosing. And, mushrooms might be the original migrants, because science seems to be agreeing with one of Terence McKenna's two evolutionary theories. Fortunately, the one that I do like. I'm not a big fan of the other one, but of the idea that our life came from spores carried on meteorites. And in fact, that seems to probably have been true. And so the mushrooms probably are the interstellar migrants. And that source of life on Earth. But then, yes, thinking about the cutting down of trees and about how in the wake of the US invasion of Iraq, the missing tablet of the story of Gilgamesh was found. And within it was the dialogue between Gilgamesh and Enkidu, where Enkidu is saying to Gilgamesh, "You have turned the forest into a wasteland. What was this rage that came upon you that caused you to do such a thing?" And then there's the fear of how will we face our people and our gods now that we've destroyed the forest that was their home.
Yes. And then I'm wondering how we're going to segue into money. Can you segue us into money, Sean? There we go. Just
Yes.
does Graeber I can't remember. Do they guide us to when money first appears?
Well, I don't know. I don't remember if it's within The Dawn of Everything or within one of his other books. But Graeber, I think he references in The Dawn of Everything, but he has another book that's entirely about it, which is about
Oh,
the.
it's called Bullshit Jobs.
Oh, there's that one too, but there's another book that's just about money.
Oh.
And, he talks about it being connected to the Axial Revolution, which was that moment when cross-culturally there was the movement into the celestial hierarchies. There was that movement into abstraction. And one of the
We're calling in the connecting, the smooth connecting. It's the mutable square. That's
And
right. Oh. Yes. Right. Well, we're seeing Sean's internet stabilizing. We're seeing Sean's internet stabilizing. Right, because it was cutting out a little bit l last night, and we're
oh,
seeing
yeah, here I think I'm back.
You are back. How did you
Okay,
know?
good.
How did you know you were back?
Because suddenly your words were
Oh, okay.
coherent.
All right. Yeah. That's good. That's good.
Well, that's one of those things. It's like whenever things come out of resonance, come out of coherence, the one coherent signal can pull them back in. And that begins with the coherence of our hearts. So, yes, so Graeber speaks about this in connection with the Axial Revolution. Solens, who his sometimes collaborator does as well. And that Axial Revolution was kind of a cosmological shift at the moment when the gods ceased to be animal, but it was also a moment of, just a lot more consolidation of things into more fixed structures. It was a moment of abstraction. And so currency is an abstraction of value. When you have cultures that are talking about, I will give you this many cattle, you can see and smell and touch a cow, and you can understand what a cow is. When you have cultures that value something through, you can little object
We're
that are seen
rooting for your connection,
secret
okay.
and so Oh, listen. So,
Everybody join in us in rooting for the router. Rooting for Sean's router and a new router. Oh, uh-oh. Oh, now he's gone. All right. So here
here I
we are.
teleport back in.
Oh, okay. How did you do that? And where are you?
I am here, wherever here
Oh.
may be.
Okay. All right. Oh, there you
But
are. There you are.
yes.
Yeah, okay, that's good.
So
It's a mutable, fluctuating field, even
it
within
is.
myself, within all of us, our connections. It's all
Yes.
speaking. Thank you.
So where I was going was when we make value into something abstract, then we're no longer in relation in the same way. Which
Yes.
doesn't mean we can't be in relation with it. A coin is still a physical object, and it still came from the earth. And the image that's on it was something that was crafted with skill. And so we can be not say, okay, not so sure, but I like the process by which this came, but here you are. So since you're here now and I'm here now, and we've all been in some troubling places, let's make a new relationship. And I think that I would love to dream us together into a world where we're no longer working in abstracted value, and instead are working in pure living direct relation. But as long as we're in the world we're in right now, let's look at, okay, and how did so many of these coins and their further abstracted imaginary electronic forms end up in so few hands? And let's ask for money to make its great migration, its great dispersal, and become involved in, hey, money, can't you have some? Wouldn't it be so much more fun to be involved in all the creative, beautiful things we want to do? You must be lonely, locked up there in those vaults. Come out and play.
Right. It reminds me of when I was hanging out with in a complex, the Committee for the Republic, hanging out with right-wing constitutional lawyers, and I mean just many things. But there were these currency traders who took a shine to me. I was sort of like the pagan mascot, and they had this power-possessing dinner in their apartment in the Watergate, right, which was I think it was like 10 stories up. And their kid was off to boarding school, and their dog was confused about being so far away from the earth, right? And I go, ooh, their entire life is as abstract as the money, the currency trading that made it, very abstract. And that's always, with spiritual teachers and all, when the language gets too abstract, I go, where's the mango? Where's the cloak? And John O'Donohue's great that way about, the blessing is sensual. When the ghost of loss stands behind you as you gaze out the window, then may the ancestors place a cloak around your shoulders that will mend your life. And when your boat is sinking in rough water, then may the moon spin a silver pathway upon which you may safely shed, tread to shore. Which would be part of the kind of Pluto in Aquarius, quincunx, Mercury, Venus, and Cancer, just for fun. But things that we may do in the future together, but working with groups about blessings, people were, it's when this difficult thing, then may this beautiful thing. And people were pretty good at when this terrible thing, but when it got to the good thing, it got all vague. Enlightenment, happiness. It's like, no, the mango, the cloak, the pathway, the moon. Again, back to Andrew pointing out the Neptune quintile Pluto, that the image painting with words, the metaphor is the incarnational garb, whereby the cloak, the mango thing. Yeah, abstraction, right? Abstraction has its, well, that's kind of interesting, isn't it? The whole Gemini realm, which is sort of thinky, can get a little abstract, into the deep realm of metaphor, and then into incarnational sensuality. And then I find it always useful, that all of our words for money are all water. Currency, cash flow, rising tide, liquidity, right? And economists pointed this out, and just to another pebble I carry in my pocket, it was because it was such an interesting conversation. And I said, well, let's keep this water metaphor money going. And he said, well, yeah, pipelines will move through harsh neighborhoods, sucking water out with, casinos and sports stadiums and outside ownership, right? And so, and so I said, so we want to poke holes in the pipeline. He's like, exactly, poke holes in it so that it irrigates and moves slowly, the whole slow money movement. Yeah, so there's that. Well, let's hear what the Bengtsons have to say about money. Anybody who's has interesting, mysterious relationship to money, all of us really. It is an interesting mystery. And it is the water. It is the water. It's the Neptunian realm. Oh, just as a little footnote, things not in my realm as an economist, not economist, but Neptune's cycle, really is correlates with what's called the Kondratiev cycle in economics. And as Neptune moves through signs, Neptune, it's a cultural zeitgeist. So in the 1920s, Neptune's in Leo, the Roaring Twenties, right? In 1929, it enters, Virgo, party's over, right? And one of the great lectures I went to a million years ago in London was on Neptune changing sign and jazz, And so Neptune and Virgo is very complex, interesting jazz. Neptune and Libra's sunglasses, shades, cool. Neptune and Scorpio is, but so there's that realm. But let's hear what the Bengtsons have to say about money. Here we go.
To happen, I want money coming in and a good thing to happen. I want money coming in and a good thing to happen. I want money coming in and a good thing to happen. I want money coming in.
Oh God,
a good thing to happen.
You know I don't want any trouble. You might not like what I've got to say. But nothing is happening like it's supposed to, Lord. So I'm about to file a complaint. Cause I got the baby in my hand, Lord. I've been working every day. I need some good news coming, Lord. I know what you're gonna say. You're gonna say the good news is everywhere. Gonna say the good news is yours for the taking. Gonna say the good news is everywhere. Gonna say the good news is yours for the taking. But I want that money, I know. You're talking about
sunrises, sunfalls, trees grow, flowers bloom.
There was a light and now it's dark and there will be a light again. Money though. Money though. Money, money though. What are you talking about?
Time is an ocean and all time moves at once. We feel the heat and then the cold, but every plan is unfolding
at the same rate.
What we can see but we can feel is ripples through our solar plexus, meaning what happens next is
beyond our comprehension and already begun.
Beyond our comprehension and already begun.
Beyond our comprehension and already begun.
You know the good news is everywhere.
You mean the good news is yours for the taking.
Don't you know the good news is everywhere?
Don't you know the
good news is yours for the taking. So you know the good news is everywhere. Don't you know the good news is yours for the taking? So yeah.
Could you put it in a less metaphysical way? I got work to do, I got bills to pay. Yeah. I know Jesus wasn't rich, but he sure seemed that way. Was born into royalty, that's all I'm gonna say. Yeah, was born into royalty, that's all I'm gonna say. He was born into royalty, that's all I'm gonna say.
That's I'm gonna have to listen again and again to that. There's a lot coming in at the end, overlay, which is really great. And then just for the fun of it, briefly, you know, our discussions about money, wealth, I find that with the Saturn stationing for, you know, in the world and in each one of us, that whatever the issue that we're addressing is very there, you know, whatever the thing, serving as incentive for our dedication, going, This needs addressing. And I do love Jupiter trining Pluto, the community working together to transform the story about wealth, you know, and then Jupiter's interesting, quirky connection to the moon in Scorpio, water, hidden wealth. The Jupiter Pluto says for everybody who would like to put in their dedication magic backpack for the summer and more, you know, it's Jim Lewis saying Jupiter and Pluto, look at Jupiter and Pluto, incredible for publicity, right? So we'll, or diasporing, spreading information. So this is storytelling. This is Pluto. What gets us through the Phoenix? What gets us through the underworld? All the different chapters of our life, you know, what got us through when usual forms of support weren't there? We are wealthy. You know, the wealth and the hidden wealth with whatever got us through going right. So the story of the Phoenix, and before the Phoenix bursts into flames and is reborn, she sings this hauntingly beautiful song about what's really important, mutual aid and kinship and, you know, collaborating with the earth and just, again, fill in the blank, right? And all of creation, the entire community of creation listens to the Phoenix's song and is reminded and recentered about what's really important, what's real wealth, you know, power, friendship, and all. So that's why we say the Phoenix got a lot of publicity. All of creation listened to her song. So just for everybody to go, is that something each person would like to be able to? Well, this part of the chart asks everybody going, oh, everybody here, what is your Phoenix's song? In what form would you sing it? In what form would you diaspora? If each one of us, you know, has the capacity to focus collective mind on what we deem to be important, what would that be? You know, and see, the wondering also is very kin to the vow. I wonder what that would be. You know, if we each had the opportunity to focus collective attention, we wonder what that would be. And then the wonder grows the form of the delivery. So just for fun to ruminate in those realms, I like Ursula Le Guin saying, a child free from the guilt of ownership and the burden of economic competition will grow up with the will to do what needs doing and the capacity for joy in doing it. That's fun. You know, I mean, I think the Cancerian planets, Mercury and Venus leading the sun, you know, it's like feeling what's needed and responding. And the joy. It is useless work that darkens the heart, says Ursula. She says, the delight of the nursing mother, of the scholar, of the successful hunter, of the good cook, of the skillful maker, of anyone doing needed work and doing it well. Let me just, this is so humming in our chart and in ourselves, right? Of anyone doing needed work and doing it well, you know, and it's part of our navigating through the summer, like what, feeling the need and responding. And I think the connection in a quirky way, the quincunx to Pluto, is feeling the need and responding, that if it is dedicated, if it's needed work and doing it well, Pluto goes, all right, there you go. So she says, the delight of the scholar, the successful hunter, of the good cook, of the skillful, of anyone doing needed work and doing it well. This durable joy is perhaps the deepest source of human affection and of society as a whole. You go, oh. And then I just wanted to, I had some Graeber quotes that danced along too that seem part of what we'll brew together here. He says, anarchist beliefs turn on two elementary assumptions. The first is that human beings are under ordinary circumstances about as reasonable and decent as they are allowed to be, and can organize themselves and their communities without needing to be told how. Right. The second is that power corrupts. Most of all, anarchism is just a matter of having the courage to take the simple principles of common decency that we all live by and to follow them through to their logical conclusions. Right. This is very, very, very the chart of now, and very, very when Yona asks, you know, what is the Mercury Venus in Cancer feeling, what's needed and responding, you know, quincunx to Pluto, intensity, and, you know, in Aquarius community. That's really it. Having the courage to take the simple principle of common decency that we all live by and to follow them through to their logical conclusions. I like that. And then just gathering, you know, again, it's a mutable time, gathering who brought what. Feel free to chime in, you know. Paramahansa Yogananda says, the moment you know who you are, you know what to do. That's nice. That's it's a good pith. That's saying a lot and a little too. The moment you know who you are, you know what to do. It's like, So this solstice, you know, it does put us in counter modern busyness, right? Because it's like stand still, step into the center of the circle rather than whacked around the edges, going, you know, coming into like each of us knowing who we are, then we know what to do. And that's part of our crafting, like, well, what am I dedicated to? And what would I like to be a voice for? All these different questions, you know, the quest begins with questions. And I like, you know, again, gathering from all over, you know, from Charlotte's Web, right? Great children's book, so powerfully poignant. You know, and Wilbur the pig says, why did you do all this for me? Wilbur asked. I don't deserve it. I've never done anything for you. You've been my friend, replied Charlotte the spider. That is itself is a tremendous thing. I wove my webs for you because I liked you. After all, what's a life anyway? We're born, we live a little while, we die. By helping you, perhaps I was trying to lift up my life a trifle. Heaven knows anyone's life can stand a little of that, right? So the Panchatantra, value of friendship is the greatest of wealth, Charlotte's Web by E.B. White. And it's so, I don't know, many of you might have read it. It's a very powerfully moving children's book. And I love that E.B. White said, you know, to write the final scene where Charlotte the spider dies, it's even moving, think about it. He said he had to take several walks outside and breathe deeply, you know, before he'd come back and write it, going, she died alone. It's like, whoa. I mean, he was, and he berated himself for, it's like, it's a spider that I made up in my mind, you know, but it's like, no, it's all, it struck a very strong and beautiful chord. So we do love that.
And the etymology of that name means free woman.
What, which name, Wilbur?
Charlotte.
Oh, Charlotte. Oh, that's great. Would I say it again?
Free woman.
Ah.
And so from her freedom, Charlotte chooses who to love and to share beauty with that beloved friend.
And I remember talking to my friend Jamie Yeager, and he said he had no fear of death, you know, and I'm always impressed when people say that. I go, even in heavy airplane turbulence, you know, just, and he goes, no. And I said, well, what about all the books you want to write? You know, you've written a great deal. You're one of the most cultured and knowledgeable people and all these books. And he goes, I think I want to do that. But we really won't know until we die what our real dedication was. You know, he said, maybe my highest calling is to be a good friend. It's like, okay, right. You know, and what is it to be a good friend? And I think the conversation with the Cancerian planets, you know, that Yona asks about too, is I liked some in a group where people found me dangerous. I'm like, I'm not dangerous, you know. But then the leader of this small cult said, Caroline, you're very safe. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, people are safe to be themselves in your presence. I'm like, oh, absolutely. That's completely, completely true. And that's, you know, part of the feeling what's needed, you know, and part of our dedication crafting is, well, what do we want to feel like? And what do we want to feel like to others? And Pluto Quincunx says, great power in these wonderings, you know, what do each one of us want to feel like? And it's like, well, safe is good for starters. Okay, money is flow, says Dina. Right. Well, we have a lot of flow coming up, and okay. We have.
I can say
yes.
Something.
Well, oh yes, please. Yeah.
You need to be inviting us to chime in.
Yes.
And I don't know that I can because it's hard to finish a sentence these days. But I notice you talking, and it doesn't stop you if you don't finish a sentence or if you lose track. Just come in somewhere else. So right. That is, I just wanted to say that. Thank you.
I'm glad my skidding around is liberating. Right, there you go. She's doing that. She's just skittering around there. I can do that too. Absolutely. You are welcome and safe to join in. In fact, you know, more than welcome. Absolutely. Yes, if we see somebody's boat.
It's not that I can follow you. Someday I'll follow you and then I'll go off over there. And then I'll have to come back and, oh, Sean's talking now. And then I'll come in again.
Well,
so all kinds of weaving is happening here.
No, that's great. That's great. Well, because, you know, it's probably all the time, you know, I mean, the astrological language says some things are always true, but there are times when they are truer. So I feel that too, which is like focus and then what am I done? Focus and then associative to and fro. But we're in a gathering where it's safe. Right, there we go. It's safe. It's safe to wander around. Yeah, and maybe we'll bring in just the one more Bengtson, and then we have a beautiful ending and everything too. But this was something also that was a wonderfully important song to yourself, Sean, about hope. You know, when you were hanging on the edge, right? And I think it is for all of us, you know, hanging on the edge. So let's go for the Bengtsons one more time, and their Hope Comes. It's so good.
Hope comes from the place where the hurt comes. I said, hope comes from the place where the hurt comes. I said, hope comes from the place where the hurt comes. I said, hope comes from the place where the hurt comes. I said, hope comes from the place where the hurt comes. I said, hope comes from the place where the hurt comes. I said, hope comes from the place where the hurt comes. I said, hope comes from the place where the hurt comes.
The part of you that is not all right, yeah, is also the part that suffering is the part that calls in change, and you don't have to feel ashamed. There is nothing to forgive. The part of you that is crying out is the part that wants to live. Yeah,
hope comes from the place where the hurt comes. I said, hope comes from the place where the hurt comes. I said, hope comes from the place where the hurt comes. I said, hope comes from the place where the hurt comes.
When your world is burning down, well, getting hot is a sane reaction, but one in need of action, because your spirit needs protection. So
prepare. Gather up your sinew and gather up your faction. Hey. Hope is not a feeling. Hope is an action. Hey.
Hope comes from the place where the hurt comes.
That song really holds up. That's really good. Do you remember it from last summer, Sean?
Very much, yes.
And there is nothing to be ashamed of, right? Again, we're dissolving in the Neptune thing, salve e coagula. But yeah, hope is not a feeling. Hope is an action. This is very Saturn Pisces for now. And spirit needs protection, right? We do want our boundaries. We do want our boundaries. Yeah, and our dedication creates the boundaries. Yeah, it's like a friend of mine was, she was in a dormitory and a man broke into her room, but she was focused on her calculus, like just really focused. And he's like, "What are you doing?" And she's like, "I'm doing my calculus." And he left and created mayhem everywhere else, whatever. But it was her dedication that was a shield that person couldn't do ill, you know. So the boundaries. And maybe again, we do want to bring up Project 25 because you just watched the John Oliver episode that was so good. We do want to be aware of the danger, you know, and that's also part of the, you know, well, everything. It's part of everything in the world. It's part of Pluto squaring, I mean, whatever. But yeah, the very real danger and the complexity of what's before us. Yeah, I took notes, but it's pressure in your mind, the Project 25 of what Trump says he will do, and again, the organizational competence around his incompetent self, you know, drill, baby, drill, day one, right? Abolish the EPA, abolish the Department of Education. You kind of like to abolish the FBI, going, "We'll give you that one." Is that what you had thought, Sean? Oops. Oh, we've lost Sean's connection. Maybe there we go. Come in, Sean's router. Rooting for the router. Oh, almost. Should I keep talking? Is that how you know that you're back or not? No. Well, I'll have to turn to my own sparse notes. I think Sean will be, now he's gone. Now he's coming back, perhaps.
Well, and it's funny that every time I come back, suddenly there's clarity.
Suddenly there's what?
Suddenly there's clarity of the signal when I come back in. I get knocked out, but then I come back in.
So there's
much to learn from that.
Right. Project 2025 undermines the Department of Justice, says Laura. Right. Yes, hope is an action. Okay, back in there. But back to Project 25. Anything that you can remember, the horrors of what's really being planned, closing the border, right? Militarizing soldiers on the border, right? Forced, you know, getting rid of as many immigrants as you can.
Right. And then there was the deep structural piece of it, which is replacing civil service positions.
Oh, yes, that's really
reclassifying them as political positions. And there being the cadre of people already recruited to come in to fill those positions. Because I think the first time that Trump came in, none of his backers really believed it was going to happen. And right. So they weren't quite ready. But now they are very ready to make it real. And so these deeply dedicated people who have spent decades learning the minute details and the fine art of what's important about what they do. People overseeing inspections of power plants, people overseeing food quality, people forecasting the weather, all being able to be dismissed and replaced for political reasons. However, there is exactly one point of Project 25 that I agree with, which is dismantling and eliminating the FBI.
Oh, that's where you went out before. Right, that's where you went out before, and now, but you're still here, right? Ah, every time you mention dismantling the FBI, your router cuts out. He didn't mean it. He loves the FBI, but no, never mind. That's very funny. All right, we're just calling in the router again, calling in. But what Sean was mentioning, and he might join me in a second again too. Because what he was saying is the policy to classify. Oh, I bet he's about to come back. Oh no.
Yes. Well, I guess the NSA must not have liked what I was saying about the FBI.
Right. Never mind. We love it. Who's a good FBI? We reframe it. Yes, you are. Yes, you are good. We won't mention that. But I was just reiterating that the crucial thing of declassifying all civil servants as political appointees to be swept out, the elimination. Yeah, as you say, I mean, people can be cynical about politics, but there are people, you know, who are dedicated, right? It's a Saturn issue, who know things. Part of the Vietnam War horror was because of the McCarthy hearings. They accused everyone who knew anything about Asia of being a communist and got rid of them. So there was no knowledge, no sane voice to counteract, you know, the crazy warmongering of the Vietnam War. Yeah.
And that has continued to echo. I mean, at the top levels in U.S. embassies, they always make sure that the ambassador and the highest appointees are people who don't have knowledge of the region. There are many people who are working at the lower levels in the embassies who know the regions very well. But the people making decisions in the embassies tend to be recruited specifically because they don't have those affinities. And so already there are examples of how long lasting these kinds of bad structural changes can be. And so yes, it is essentially an administrative coup that we're speaking of in this regard. And the institutional knowledge that would be lost would take decades to replace, even if the policy were reversed.
Yes. There was some great connective thought, but it's gone away. It's gone away. There we go. It's a focus and space. I know. Yes. So team, part of our ongoing cahooting is, so what do we want to Saturn protect and boundary? You know, and this election is, you know, is going to take real grown-ups. Biden has done some great things. His policy on Gaza is heartbreakingly egregious. And so we still work for a change of heart in him. But given what's on the table, the earth, in fact, got to sift through and vote for the earth and see the pewter shields around ourselves. Our spirit needs protection around democracy itself, you know, around the civil service protecting, going, I like animating Boomerang, which is Boomerang, which is back to where it came from with a lemon meringue pie in the face. Boomerang, there we go. You know, and again, that's part of the protection dynamic in our dedication to protecting, yeah, knowledge and competence. Knowledge and competence are good things. And Lara says we want to protect life and what we have learned. Yes, protecting diversity. Yeah, I mean, because we're you know, this solstice that we will do more on Friday, you know, but the wedding of the earth. And like Harriet Tubman, again, it's her participatory animism that was effective in her doing such an impressive, great job of being, you know, a conductor who never lost a passenger, never lost a trip. She said, I can say what most people who drive trains are, you know, as the head of the Underground Railroad, you know, I can say what they could not, you know, which is never had an unsuccessful journey. And we go, right, you know, to feel the quality. And remember also part of our aspiration, the North Node of the Moon at 12 Aries, which is diffusing hot conflagrations, diffusing hot situations. It's a bomb that fails to go off. So, you know, may we be calm weavers, right? Cooling out the conflagration. So, yes. And then, so does, if everybody has their little scrap of paper or their stone, there we go. Okay, I've got my little scrap of paper for the dedication. Because I think just for the fun of it, okay, no, I can't change into gallery view for whatever reasons. We've all have our technical things, but I can scroll along. But I think just for the fun of it, and you can unmute everybody, right, Aaron? Oh, there we go. Thank you. Oh, how wonderful. So let's start with Donna. And what we're going to do is each person just hold, you don't have to say anything, but you're just holding your dedication. And then we're all going to go, woof, woof. And then we'll move to the next person. Is that a fun idea? Okay, so Donna's got her piece of paper.
There you are with a little circle and four levels of dedications.
You are an excellent, excellent, responsible, dedicated student person. All right, so everybody on the count of three. Oh, look, and we even have Priscilla. I was hallucinating you had a dog. No, you don't. It's your hands. It's a hand of it. Okay. I thought you were holding a little dog. Okay. All right. Like on the count of three for Donna. Okay. We're thinking, okay. Donna's dedication. On the count of three, we're going to go woof, woof. One, two, three. Woof, woof.
Woof, woof.
Woof, woof. Woof, woof. All right. And now for Priscilla. Priscilla, hold your dedication. Okay. Hold your dedication. Okay. And on the count of three, we're all going to go woof, woof, which is the incarnational Pluto into the dedicated thing. Okay. One, two, three. Woof, woof.
Woof, woof.
And then for Sally. For Sally. Okay. You're holding your dedication. You're holding your dedication. And then all of us on the count of three, I think there's a delay, but what the hell. On the count of three, we'll go woof, woof. One, two, three. Woof, woof. And then for Ruth. For Ruth, do you have your little dedication? Ah, splendid, splendid in a thing. All right. And then on the count of three, we're all going to go woof, woof, and see the power coming into these. One, two, three. Woof, woof.
Okay. Woof, woof.
And then for Lara, do you have your, oh, that's wonderful. That's great. All right. So on the count of three, we'll go woof, woof, and power comes into the dedication. One, two, three. Woof, woof.
Woof, woof.
Okay, and now for Nancy. For Nancy, you have your powerful dedication. Yes, wonderful. All right, and now on the count of three, we're all going to go woof, woof. One, two, three. Woof, woof.
Woof, woof.
Right. And for Yona, do you have your dedication?
Here.
Oh, that's excellent. That's right. Oh, I was seeing. That's
right. Woof, woof.
That's excellent. All right. That's right. Yeah, that is your, the doggy is the portal for the dedication. All right. On the count of three, one, two, three. Woof, woof.
Woof, woof.
Yay, yay. And for Maggie, do you have your little, your dedication in something? Oh, wonderful. All right, so on the, and we're seeing power coming into it. Okay. On the count of three. One, two, three. Woof, woof.
Woof, woof.
And for Dina, do you have your dedication? Oh, splendid, splendid. Count of three. One, two, three. Woof, woof.
Woof, woof. Woof.
Great. And for Anne, do you have your dedication? Ah, splendid. On the count of three, power coming into it. One, two, three. Woof, woof.
Woof, woof. Woof.
And for Sean. Oh, excellent. Oh, that's right. The thing. Better than money. On the count of three. One, two, three. Woof, woof.
Woof, woof.
And for Miria and team, dedications abounding there. Wonderful, wonderful. On the count of three, we see power coming into your dedications. One, two, three. Woof, woof.
Woof, 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 woof.
And for Elena, do you have your dedication in your hand? Yes, sort of.
Look at this baby.
Okay.
Baby.
Well, it can still be forming, but whatever it is, even if you don't know what it is, we're going to give you all the powerful woof in the world on the count of three. One, two, three. Woof, woof.
Woof, woof.
Oh, and then, and for Aaron. Great. Do you have a little dedication? You have. Oh, that's great. For Aaron, on the count of three. One, two, three. Woof, woof.
Woof, woof.
And then for me. Okay. You have to do the one, two, three. Thank you, team. Thank you, team. Right, and then just because we started with, you know, kind of boys, the heat is on, you know, and journeyed around, but so we end with, there's nothing more beautiful than Natalia Lafourcade singing the words of Maria Sabina. So we go from the heat and the fire and the rambling around and the dedication and the thing, you know, into Natalia Lafourcade as a beautiful ending for ourselves. Here we go.
Del sol y los rayos de la luna. Cúrate, mijita, el dolor con el sonido del río, la cascada y la espuma. Con el vaivén del mar que va y viene, deja que te agarre. Con el vaivén del mar que va y viene, deja que te ame. Cúrate, mi niña, con las hojas de la menta y la hierba buena, ponle amor al té. En lugar de azúcar, toma y mira las estrellas. Que los queme el fuego y vengan nuevas flores. que se vuelvan polvo, que se vuelvan polvo todos los dolores. Que los queme el fuego, que los queme el fuego y vengan nuevas flores.
Thank you, team, for our meandering, bewildering, bewilder journey, which again, I hope you can join us on the Friday full moon as part of this completion. So may we be wilder, and may we, I love that song, always remember, we are the medicine, we are the medicine. And what do we want to feel like? Protected and protecting, liberated and liberating. Thank you, team.